glad to be here, but at my age, I'm glad to be anywhere. It's especially good to see three couples in here tonight that were in our church in Titusville, Florida, and the Moores and the Brooms and the Griffins, and I'm glad that you're here tonight. I don't think this thing, let me see. This thing's not working right now back there, this thing. Huh? Let me just give you a quick review. I'm a foreigner. You know, right now in America, there are 500,000 people that came to America for the same reason I did, and that was to get an education. I came to college. I'm from a little island called Jamaica in the West Indies, and they didn't have a university when I was coming up, so I came up here and went to college. People in Jamaica either went to Canada or England or America and to college, and I came up here to college, and I was raised on a cattle ranch, dairy, and banana plantation. My father I'm a farmer there along. And, you know, let me tell you a sad thing. Most people who come to America like I did want to be in an American home, and most of them never ever get into an American home. Never have the opportunity. They're never invited in. And let me tell you the power of being hospitable. I've been through 82 Christmases, and the four I remember the most were 1946, 47, 48, and 49. That's a long time ago. But you know, four American families invited a foreign boy into their home at Christmas time. And two of them were dirt poor. They really were. One was here in North Carolina. I remember down around Fayetteville, I think. And it was just an old farmer. Their son was in college with me, and he invited me home for Christmas. And I've never forgot. I can still tell you, after all of these years, more about those Christmases than I can any of the other Christmases that I went through, and the details of them, because people were just nice. And there are people over here from nations that we can't get into. And just to be hospitable, the power of just inviting people. I still think one of the greatest tools all of us have is a dining room table. I really do. And to be able to use that, and to be able to invite them in. And I'm sure that in areas like this, there are lots and lots of foreign students. Well, not only foreign students, people that you can invite in to do it. I pastored for, I'm in my 61st year of ministry. I pastored for 45 years, 30 years in the last church that Marnia and the Brooms and the Moores were in, right down at Cape Kennedy. Our community is going through a crisis right now, because at the Cape, they're laying off people by the thousands, literally. And that's about all there was in our area. And to do it, so, you know, it's a good time to be able to trust God. And for the last, I've been retired now 16 years, and for about 12 of those, my wife and I traveled about 3 weeks a month. And we went all over the United States, been in all kinds of churches, sort of like yours. You're out in left field, and some of them that wear robes are in right field, and some of them are in center field. Are you with me? Everybody likes to think they're in center field, but, you know, some swing off the chandeliers and some wear robes, right? And about 3 years ago, my wife had a stroke, and I've been sick too. I've had heart problems. I've got machinery in here running me now. So we're confined at home for lots of reasons, and my ministry is really reduced to 2585 Kaiser Court. That's where I've lived in the same house for 45 years. But I've got four small groups. That's how I'm investing my life, and with some one-on-ones. On Sunday nights, I meet with single guys between about 22 and 32 that are not married. On Tuesday night, my wife and I meet with about six couples that are older, and they're the more mature group in the faith. Wednesday night, we're meeting with young couples, and boy, the struggles they have is something else. And Then on Thursday night, I meet with divorced men between 40 and 55. Some of the most horrible situations I've ever seen in my life, but I just believe that God gives everybody a chance. And then I have some one-on-ones that I make. And I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. I'm content. The Bible says contentment with godliness is great gain. So if I can just get godly, I'm content. I'll be really off, well off. Okay, let's see if we can get started here. Not working. Can we? Huh? Okay. How are you all doing?
Good.
Really? You know, let me say something. When most people who go to church tell lies, or not most of them, some of them at the church door, somebody say, how are you doing? Fine. And they're really hurting like all get out. You know, one of the things in having a real church is that people can be honest. I would say that 50% of the people at least that come to church every Sunday are discouraged in some way. And there's nothing wrong with that. Why would the Bible say encourage one another daily while it is called today if there weren't a lot of discouraged people? But everybody's doing fine, you know. A little grin, good. Learn to tell the truth. And just learn to be honest. You come in the church and they say, how are you doing? Tell him honestly how you're doing. And if he's doing the right kind of job, he'd say, well, let's go pray. If you're doing a bad thing, you know, I mean, you're having a tough time. I mean, it's hard to enjoy church if your daughter came home drunk last night. Are you with me? Hey. Or something like that. It's really hard to concentrate. And then if you got laid off or the doctor told you that you had cancer or something, or a loved one is very sick. So we need to lift one another up and really pray for one another. Now, I want to teach you an answer to this question that's always true. Always true. And I learned it in the oddest of all places, in Texas prisons. There was a lady down in Palestine, Texas. They have 4 or 5 big prisons down there. And she had a ministry. She died recently, but to the prisoners and to their families that came in. And when you went to visit the Christians in these jails, and you asked them, how are you doing? They'd say, this is the answer they'd give right here. I'm blessed, and very much so. We're all blessed. I mean, we're extremely blessed. Everybody in this room is in the top 5% of wealth in the world. Can you get that? I mean, hey, you're in the top 5% of wealth in the world, everybody in this room. I could go on and on and on about how we are blessed in so many ways. I remember my first house, we had a path to the bath. You know what I'm talking about? Had a wood stove, kerosene lamps, and an ice box. That's not a refrigerator. And I can well remember when we got electricity for the first time. But, you know, hey, we were happy and content and things like that with what God had given us. And to some degree, you know, wealth is relative. We were wealthier than most of the people. They didn't have anything. So we ought to be thankful. Now, I want to tell you a story tonight that I really like. And I'm going to put it up here on the screen, because this is one of the greatest lessons we can learn in life. Charles Plum was a U.S. Navy jet pilot in Vietnam. After 75 combat missions, his plane was destroyed by a surface-to-air missile. He ejected and parachuted into enemy hands. He was captured and spent 6 years in a communist Vietnamese prison. He survived the ordeal and now lectures on lessons he learned from that experience. Now, one day, when Plum and his wife were sitting in a restaurant, another man at the table came over and said, you're Plum. You flew fighters in Vietnam from the aircraft carrier Kitty Hawk. You were shot down. Plum said, how in the world did you know that? And the guy said to him, I packed your parachute. Plum grasped in surprise. The man pumped his hand and said, I guess it worked. Plum showed him, I'm sure it did. If your chute hadn't worked, I wouldn't be here today. Now, Plum couldn't sleep that night thinking about it. He said, I kept wondering what that man looked like in a navy uniform, a white hat, a bib in the back, and bell-bottom trousers. And I wondered how many times I might have never seen him and even said good morning. After all, you know, I was a fighter pilot, and he was just a sailor. Just a sailor. Pom thought of the many hours the sailor had spent at a long wooden table in the bow of the ship, carefully folding the shrouds and folding the silks of each parachute, holding in his hands each time the fate of someone he didn't know. Now, Plum asked his audience this. Who has and is packing your parachute? Everyone has someone who provides what they need to make it through the day and through life well. He points out that he needed many kinds of parachutes when his plane was shot down over the enemy territory. He needed physical parachutes, mental parachutes, emotional parachutes, and spiritual parachutes along that line. So he called on these supports before reaching safety. Now, sometimes in the daily challenges of life that life gives us, we miss what is really important. We may fail to say hello, please, and thank you, congratulate someone or something wonderful that has happened to them, give them a compliment, or just do something nice for no reason. As you go through, not this Christmas week, I used this the last time, but go this month, recognize the people who have packed your parachute. So what I'd like you to do right now is this. I'd like you to stop and thank God for five people. You see, most of what God does for us, he does through other people. Come on, hey. That's how he said he was going to work it. Just stop God right now and thank God for five people that have been blessing, and try to call one of them up or write them a note this next week and just say, hey, I might have been a school teacher from years and years ago along that line, and somebody that was a real blessing to you along life. You remember them, and you remember them with pleasure. So we're going to be talking a lot about prayer, so a good thank you. The Bible is full of thank yous. There's a book written that somebody gave me last Christmas or Christmas a year ago on the power of thank you. And they prove that even waitresses that write thank you on their bills get more tips than anybody else. Hey, and the power. But hey, the Bible warned us about that. The Bible said, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. Okay, just stop right now. It's very simple. Lord, thank you for Danny Warren, for Charlie Royce. I'm thinking of literal people in my life. Just go ahead and thank God. It doesn't have to be a long prayer, but thank him for those people right now that have been a blessing in your life. You know, I regret that I never told my father. I mean, sloshing around in Comany all my life, his life, to send me to school, because I had to go. There weren't any public schools in Jamaica when I was coming up, so everybody went to a private school, if you went to school at all, for providing for me, teaching me manners, teaching me some of the basics of life. I wish again I could do it, that he was living to be able to do this. And do it. But I'm trying to catch up now by some of the people in my life that have been a blessing to me. And God, just before he died a few years ago, I knelt down in front of a Methodist mailman in Mississippi, in a little town that didn't even have a stoplight or a filling station or anything like that, and thank him for something he said to me one day when I was in seminary, in that thing that changed my whole life. As I look back across my life, and I was able to kneel down for Brother Danny and say, Brother Danny, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for what you said that day while we were fishing. Hey, that has had an effect on my life and my whole ministry along that line. So there's a lot of it. Okay, now, I want us to make some, one of the things you're going to learn, a part of prayer is confessions. Okay, the word confession means to say what God is saying. Okay, and say the truth back. So this is something that we all have to learn. But I want you I found this in a refrigerator door. Someday if I have time, I'll write a book on all I got off of refrigerator doors. Are you with me? People stick little things up in their refrigerator door. So read this out loud, would you please? Oh, let's try again. You do better than that. Come on.
Absolutely not. This is what grace is. His love for me is not built on the basis of my performance. But I do have a choice as to whether or not I will receive God's love in the way that He is.
You know, it's hard to believe because we're living in a world where you have to earn love. Why do you love so-and-so? Because. God doesn't love because. God just loves, period. But I don't care who loves me or who loves you. If we don't receive that love, it doesn't do us any good at all, does it? Huh? Okay, next thing. Now, you know what's frightened me? I've been in 250 churches across America. You know what frightens me more than anything else? I have not been in one single church. I'm not saying there are none. I don't know. That teaches the basics to new Christians. Not one. That's like a school system that doesn't teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. Hey, you take in Brevard County, one of the ladies in my group, she runs a literacy program. There are 30,000 people in my county that can't read. 30,000. Now, they're at a disadvantage in America. If you can't read, you're at a real disadvantage. Hey, and that's just the basic of education. Now, how many of you know what this is called? Okay, a few of you do. About 300 AD, that's 1700 years ago, the Christians got together and said, what do you have to believe? What are the basics of the Christian life? And they came up with this, and this is still said. I'll bet you in most of the churches in Raleigh and Winston-Salem and all these places around here, this is said by almost many, many churches every Sunday, because it sums up what the Christian faith is all about, the basics in the Christian faith, the things that are foundational in it, the very basics. So I'd like you to just say it out loud right now, would you please? I'm getting interested in them last two things. It's kind of it, you understand? At 82. I left off one phrase by mistake, and it goes in that bottom paragraph. It's the communion of the saints. Hey, the saints ought to get along well together. If you'll notice, the essence of the Christian faith hangs in Jesus. Right now, there's an attack in America on the intellectual level to do away with Jesus. They're trying to prove that, you know, he didn't rise from the grave. There's a tremendous attack on our universities on Jesus Christ and who he is, because if you can prove that that's not true about Jesus, you can sink the Christian faith, because the Christian faith is built on Jesus Christ and who he is and why he came and what he did and what he's doing today. That's what it's all about. Now, back to the basics. Remember I just said none of the basics at all? Now, here's what Michael Jordan said, and I want you to read it out loud, because this is true about anything and everything. Would you read this out loud, please?
The minute you get away from the fundamentals, the bottom will fall out of whatever you are doing.
You know, in a few weeks, if they haven't started already, I don't know, the best players in baseball are coming to Florida to practice the basics because they know they can't win when the baseball season starts if they don't do the basics well. They're not coming down there to learn razzle-dazzle. They're coming down there to learn hitting, fielding, and catching, throwing, and fielding. That's what they're basically coming down there to rehearse, to sharpen up on the basics of the life. So what I'd like to do tonight is this. Our mission together this weekend is, Lord, teach us how to pray. Just teach us how to pray. I'm still praying that. I mean, I can pray some, but I'm learning a whole lot about prayer as I go along. And prayer is the most basic fundamental of the Christian life. It's, in fact, let me put it this way. If you understand what prayer is, prayer is communication. It's the most basic fundamental of any relationship. Hey, every relationship depends upon communication as you go along, or it doesn't succeed along that line. Now, what I'm going to do, let me back up here. I'm going to hand out a questionnaire, and I want you to, I found out this. Look, you can't possibly remember what you hear. If I asked how many of you remember what your preacher preached on last Sunday, could you tell me? I'm not going to embarrass you, but I'm just saying, hey, there's so much shot at us every day, everywhere we go. It's almost impossible to remember stuff. And writing it out has an effect on you. Let me tell you something funny. I went to these boarding schools, and we really had some mean teachers, okay? And when we misbehaved, they'd make us do things like write out, "I must not talk in class 500 times before we could go out and do anything. But I had an especially sadistic teacher. He made me write this out 50 times. Now, I'm trying to show you. Back when I'm 14, that's 60-something years ago, 68 years ago, he made me write this out 50 times. It went like this. I'm just showing you the value. Persistent perversity provokes the patient pedagogue, producing particularly painful punishment. See, I've never forgotten that. So I'm going to hand out. And so some of you guys help me over here, would you? Just give everybody one. I want you to get your pencils out. That's why I want you sitting around tables. See if you can pass some of these out. I hope we have. Pastor, how many people do we have here tonight? Do we have them?
47.
Okay, I printed up 50 of these. So the Lord has been unto me according to my faith. Now, what I'd like you to do right now, look. Let me ask you a couple of basic questions. I want you to answer out loud. How much is 2 plus 2? Okay. See, you learned that, and you use that today in all that you're doing, right? Hey. And these are some basic questions about prayer. And so I want you to answer the first four questions on here, and then we're going to discuss them. The first four questions on here, just look, we're here to learn. If nobody ever taught you some of these things, why should you know them? I think there's only somebody needs one over here, Rock. This lady, right? Anybody else need one? Okay, let's go over this. We're just rehearsing the basics because you're going to build something. You got to build it on a firm foundation. And if you don't have a firm foundation, it won't hold up. And so let's just go over these together if you're ready. Okay, are you ready? I know everybody's traveling at different speed along this line. Okay, here's the definition that I want to use for prayer. And all communication involves talking and what? Come on.
Listening.
Hey, I grew up thinking of prayer as something you just taught because that's all I saw modeled. Do you know that nobody ever taught me you could hear God? Today, you know, I have a lot of hard days, a lot of discouragement like everybody else. What keeps me going as much as any other one thing are the answers to prayer that I receive by listening to God and doing what God told us to do. I mean, I go back and I think, wow, that couldn't, I'll be telling you some of the stories because boiling it down to really a practical life. But most of the problems people have is in listening to God. We don't, but you know, one-way conversation is very dull. And most prayer people think of prayer as shoving a shopping list at God and then expecting him to deliver it right away. And when it doesn't happen, they say prayer doesn't work and it doesn't get along that line. I'm absolutely persuaded of this. You cannot live a quality Christian life without prayer. You just can't. And somewhere along the line, you're going to get sunk along that line, but anyway, to do it. Now, what is the primary purpose of prayer? I mean, I'm going to give you a bunch of reasons to pray. That'll happen if we all pray. And look, be encouraged. I'm 82 and I'm still learning some of this stuff. Are you and me? Hey, God has been very patient with me. If I'd been God, I'd have done up with me a long time ago. Are you and me? Hey, I really would have. I'd have picked on somebody younger and said they're able to develop it. Now, here is the primary purpose for prayer, and I can show it to you as we go along. Would you read that out loud, please? Okay, a personal, relevant. Relevant means it relates to life. Intimate, that's a bit, and dynamic, powerful relationship with God. Okay, let's go along here. Now, the title of my ministry was, read that out loud, please.
Main thing.
Okay, good. Now, let me explain that to you. Everything has a main thing. What's the main thing of that?
Tell time.
You know what that cost me? I went to Walmart to buy a battery for a watch I had, and they wanted $8 for it, and they were selling this whole watch for $10. Now look, I've had it for 2 or 3 years, and it tells time. If you have a $5,000 Rolex and it doesn't tell time, my watch is better than yours. The purpose of a pen is to write. That thing out in the parking lot, an automobile, it has a lot of secondary things, but the one thing you want to do tonight is to automobile you home, right? These are very comfortable chairs, but the main thing in a chair is for it to sit. Okay, now, why did God make us? What does God want? What's he after in our lives? Along that line. Very fortunately for us, somebody asked him, said, "Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law? What's the most important thing that everybody does?" And I want you to read Jesus' answer out loud, please. Would you read it out loud? I'll say, Jesus said to him, and you read the rest. Jesus said to him,
"You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul,
It isn't only the great, it's the first one. And then he gave us the second one, too. Would you read this out loud, please?
Second is likened to love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets.
What that bottom thing simply means is this. If you don't have these two things in place, the rest of it ain't going to work. It's like trying to build a house without a foundation. Hey, it's going to come down sooner or later. You can build it up. But hey, and you know, I'm in the Baptist background, and I suppose a lot of you are. We're not known for even loving each other, much less other people. I mean, I will guarantee you this. I know nothing about this county, but I'll guarantee you that half the Baptist churches in this county were started in a fight. A violent disagreement, hey, where people separate and stuff. It's good for churches to start, but that's not the way God would have it. We don't know how to love each other, much less to love God. So the primary purpose of our life is to love God. That's number one stuff. Get that in order, and we'll be talking about that. Now, communion is getting along well with God, and community is getting along well with each other. Look, let's learn this before we learn anything else. Hey, that's the foundation on which all the rest of it is built. Now, let me explain to you the thing. One day God asked me, I like to talk to God and I like listening. One day he asked me a question. Would you rather have 10 women who loved you when or how they felt like it, or one woman who loved you with all their heart? Well, everybody knows the answer to this question. Hey, we'd want one person who loved us with all their heart. Wouldn't we? Is that right? We better say that whether we believe it or not. Okay, his answer to me was, I said, Father, I'd rather have one woman who loved me with all of her heart. And this is what he said. Now you understand what I'm after. Listen, God's not impressed with size. He wants people who just love him. Hey, and if we can understand that, and that's something nobody can make us do and nobody can keep us from doing. Okay, now, I don't know what you wrote on. I want to show you. You might call them by different names, but look, prayer has, my wife and I use this because it's the simplest thing for us, and I would not argue if you have something else, but it has six basic parts, and I want to go over them with you, because sometimes our prayer life is lagging because some of this is missing along this line. Okay, praise, thanksgiving, confession, intercession, petition, and what? Listening. Now, let me show you how to remember them. This is a simple way. Look up here for a minute. Praise. Praise and thanks. Hey, you thank a person for what they do. You praise them for what they are. Never forget that. Now, both of these are very powerful. Hey, you try this out on people. You start praising people and see what happens. Hey. I just discovered the truth of blessing a few years ago. The word blessing in the Bible, the Greek word is eulogy. We bless people when they're dead. And they don't hear a word of it. I mean, not one single word. Hey, come on. Hey, bless them when they're living. You know, when the Bible says bless your enemies, it says eulogize your enemies. Say something good about them. We don't know whether Christianity works or not because we don't often try it along that line. Okay, praise. Thanksgiving, confession. That's just saying the same. When you say confession to a Baptist, the next word he thinks of is sin. But that's not necessarily confession. I come to God, I've got a difficult task, and I said, God, you said I could do all things through Christ who strengthened me. I'm going to need a lot of strength today to do what I'm facing in life. And I'm asking you for it. Then intercession is praying for others. And petition is what you ask for yourself. And then the palm represents hearing. So, you know, fingers are not much use unless they're tied together in a palm that works. So that's just a simple way to remember it. And when you throw these ingredients in different proportions, your prayer life will get a little different and be a little different along that line. Now, the biggest problem you have in prayer, let me give you some comfort here. The only people who don't have problems in prayer are people like myself. I do not have any problems in golf. You know why? I don't play. I mean, I'm not worried about slicing. But look, the very fact that you're having a problem in prayer means that you're praying, because I have know of nothing that is attacked in the Christian life, in my own life, any more than prayer. I don't know. That, I think the devil's more scared of prayer than he is of the one thing in the whole wide world along that line. Now, you're going to, when I take a survey on these, and they might, you might have something else, one of the things I'm having a little fight with now is discouragement in unanswered prayer. I've been praying for some people for 40 years and they haven't come through yet. I mean, you know, hey, God, would you like to hurry up a little bit, you know? Of course, we want God to do everything right now. But the biggest problem that I've run into that most people have in prayer is mind wandering. You know, you get down to prayer and, well, I got to buy the groceries, I got to see the doctor, all that. I'm going to tell you how to solve that, how to take care of mind wandering. But you're going to have a problem in prayer. Sometimes I don't know what to ask along that line. But you're going to have a problem. So the fact that you have a problem is a good sign. If you don't have any problem in prayer, you're either totally sanctified and better than Jesus, because he had a problem in prayer. I mean, he was attacked to be able to do it. Okay, so don't worry about that. Now, okay, good. Now, this is what I want to major on. This is prayer 101. Now, I want you to go to your notes and answer the questions that are there under that section right there. Okay. About your own personal look. You're not going to show this to anybody. But I don't know about you. I hate scales. You know why? They tell the truth. I mean, hey, you know, do you get in a scale and lean one way and lean another and hope that it'll go back a few pounds? Come on. You know what I'm talking about. Now, look, just write down where you are. Look, let me tell you what that scripture means. Now, you're listening to somebody who's been preaching for 61 years and had 7 years of theological education, okay? What that means is when you pray, get into your closet and close the door. Pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret rewards you openly. You don't need to go to seminary to understand that. You don't even need to understand Greek. The only debatable word there is closet, and that means a quiet place where you won't be disturbed. Okay. Try to fill out the things that you see right on here, right now, where you are. You're not going to show this to anybody. This is between you and God. Go down through two or more praying together. Just go down there and answer those questions. They shouldn't take you long, because you're just writing out something that's obvious. Through the scales, just go through the scales of 1 through 10, what you think. Okay, let's look at this for a minute. Now, if you're going to do that, there are three things. I've never known anybody that did it effectively, didn't have these three things, okay, to be able to do it. Number one, a place where you can do it. Now look, we're creatures of habit. If you will think, I've just read the best secular article on habit I've ever read in my life, The Power of Habit. Habits get a hold of us. Good habits help us, bad habits hurt us. And most of what we do habitually. We just do it because we've done it for years. Okay, you need a place where you can do this. Some men go to work early. I know people have done it in their trucks. You just find a place where you can be alone for a little while with God. Number two, a time when you'll do it. I want to tell you something. You will never find time. You're going to have to make time. And I hate to tell you this. No, I won't. This is not a rule, but it's almost a rule. Most people find out the first thing in the morning, okay, to do it. And I found the secret of getting up early. You go to bed early. I mean, you can't take prayer time out of your sleep time. You just can't do it. And different ones of us have different needs for a certain amount of sleep to remain healthy and all of that. And then the third thing is this, a plan that you can follow. If not, you'll shoot from the hip. Now, I brought some plans along I want to share with you along the line. Any plan. What does the world say today? Plan your work and then what? Come on. Work your plan. It says that. Hey, that's a simple little formula. You know, if you write out who you're praying for and what you're praying for them. For instance, my daughter and son-in-law live in Atlanta. He's a principal. One of the things I pray for him is that he be a first-class principal of the school. I think a Christian testimony, we have to do a good job in what we do. And then I have other things that I write out, and I can see when God answers prayers. They're there. I've been praying for a young man that I've been burdened for regularly, and I just found out this last week he was baptized last Sunday. You know, and I wrote on in my prayer manual, thank you, Lord, thank you, you know. His name's Keith, and to be able to do that. And I will be suggesting some plans that you can follow. But if you have a plan and you're happy with it, use it. Huh. I used the plan this morning that I'm using and have been using for years along that line, and I'll share some things with you as we go along that line. Now, I don't know what answer you gave here, but most people recognize 9 or 10. Hey, and the question is, if that's true, then if that is essential, just look, living a Christian life means nothing about going to church or anything. It's just being a decent neighbor, telling the truth, doing a good job, and doing the things that you have to do. Just the Christian virtues out here. There's a lot pulling on all of us, man. Hey, when you get older like I am, you're still tempted just in different ways. Are you with me? Hey, so I need prayer just to survive in the daily life and to keep going along that line. And then, of course, in the light of your answer, how much do you pray? If you put 9 or 10, how much do you pray? That's the question along that line. Then, how important is prayer in performing a Christian ministry? Like the worship team up here, and the pastor, and the ushers and stuff. Hey, after a while we feel I can do that. I don't have to pray about it. I mean, to be able to do it, I'm just explaining to you we need to pray. I don't know what goes on in your church, but let me ask you a question. What gets the least attention on Sunday morning? In 99% of the churches I go to, prayer does. When Bill Jones come up and pray, he hadn't thought about it. Hey, music gets attention, preaching gets attention, announcements get attention. Almost every big church I'm in has a minister of media now. That's what he does. Hey, and I'm not against these things, but hey, if prayer is important, we need to project that from the pulpits, and we need to make a place for that in our pulpit. There's a lot of things I would change if I had to do again. See, how you were brought up makes a difference. I had 4 years of college and 3 years of seminary and never had a course in prayer. Can you imagine that? Them preparing people for the ministry, and I never had a course in prayer. Never had a lot of other things I didn't have a course in that I've needed. We used to even say at seminary, they prepare you for jobs that don't exist. You know, we're laughing about that, but hey, I was in Lubbock 2 weeks ago. I'm not traveling at all. These two meetings come together. I don't think I went anywhere last year except Brooklyn Tabernacle where they were built on prayer. That's one. But I met a guy in Texas that's the minister of prayer to church, the full-time minister of prayer at a church in Lubbock, Texas. He's the first guy I've ever met in my life that is the full-time minister of prayer, and I've been in all kinds of churches and know all about them. So, see, the reason you hire staff members is because something's important, right? Hey, that's the way bigger churches do. We need a youth worker, we need a whatever along that line. But see, coming out of our seminaries and being how I was brought up and everything like that, you know, I was never taught about listening in prayer. I mean, never taught about that. Hey, in fact, I knew people that said, we don't need to listen to God, we've got the Bible. I mean, they do that. In fact, I don't want to get into that tonight. Now, if somebody asks you tomorrow, you said, I went to a prayer meeting, a prayer conference last night, and somebody says, what good does it do to pray? What do you tell them? I mean, you know, we're all so busy, there's so much pulling on all of us. Look, I heard the other day that the average teenager texts 70 times a day. Hey, along that line. All of these things are good. We've got so many good things pulling at us. The internet, this kind of stuff, and on and on and on and on along that line. So if something doesn't do any good and it's boring or whatever else it might be, we're not going to keep it up for long. We can't. Now, let me go over things that I know happen when you really start to pray along that line. Number one. God likes it. Do you understand what religion is? Do you understand the Muslim religion? Do you understand that those people that ran into the World Trade Center were trying to please their God? They were told, if you'll do this, your God will be happy, and when you get to heaven, you'll get a lot of reward. Every religion is built like that. These are things that you do to please God. And so, we do the things that we were taught to please God. Okay? Okay. Number two, along that line. Hey, it enables us to build relationships. Relationships are built through communication. Every relationship. If you have a good husband-wife relationship, you have to communicate together. Hey. So, it builds. The way you learn to build a relationship, you communicate, and you communicate on different levels. Number three. And this is probably the best proof of it. Hey, you will be changed. One of the signs that you're praying is you find you're changed. Not because some preacher tells you to change. Hey, we get changed by the people we hang around with. Everybody knows that a teenager hangs around with the right people, he'll go up. He hangs around with the wrong people, he's going to go down. Hey, you'll find yourself changing. Now, this doesn't happen in a hurry. This happens slowly. I mean, but hey, we find ourselves changing, right? And you look at yourself in the mirror and say, I don't feel the same way I did. You know, I'll give you, for instance, you know, all of us have some people we don't particularly like, or you and me, hey. I always ask this question, who do you hope not living next door to you in heaven? Yeah, you know they're Christians, but you know what I found out through prayer? If I would start praying for people that I don't particularly want to live next door to me and have my whole attitude towards them changes, I could give you many, many illustrations along this line. You know, some people just rub us the wrong way, are you and me? And stuff, but and some people we don't agree with and stuff, but you'll find out that, hey, I find my attitude completely changing. I started praying for two people. I don't want to mention who they are, but and my whole attitude has changed towards them. I wrote them the other day and told them I was praying for them. One wrote back and said, I was really surprised. Nobody ever tells me that. He publishes a paper and along that line. Okay, number four. You're going to see everything differently. Hey, you really are. Because when you pray, you see things through God's eyes. Let me tell you one thing I learned. I've learned this, that hurt people hurt people. When somebody hurts you, they're hurting. Hurt people hurt people. And so, rather than thinking him as a mean devil out there that's hurting somebody, I realize, hey, that guy's hurting in his life and he's striking out in people. And you're going to see things differently. Hey, you know, some of you older people can testify. You know what's going to happen the day after my wife and I die? Our kids are going to come and have a garage sale with all the stuff we laid on our life for. Hey, it happens all the time. And sometimes they don't even bother with that. They get a Dempsey dumpster and dumped it all in. Hey, that stuff that I'm fighting for, giving my life for, hey, that's what's going to happen. I'm serious along. So you realize what things are, and you don't put as much stock in things as you used to put. And you put a lot of stock in people because you see them different along that line. The fifth thing, I don't know about you, but when I pray, I get motivation. Hey, you know, the Christian runs in grace like a car runs on gas or diesel. We run in grace. And when you really pray, you're getting grace. Hey, and what grace will do, it'll give you encouragement. It'll give you motivation. It'll help you. So you get up. And I wish I'd brought along a little tract. It's written by a Catholic. It's really good. Hey. He said there's only one thing in prayer that's important, that's as you pray. Doesn't make any difference how you feel. Hey, that's, your feelings are going to go up and down. Hey, forget about your feelings. Just pray. And I don't know if you know what Catholics do, the ones in monasteries. This is really good. In the monastery, they realize that they don't have set times to pray. They won't pray. And when the bell rings, everybody stops what they're doing and they go pray. Somebody told me about Mother Teresa the other day. She was feeding a beggar one day, and the bell rang, and she said to him, I think you can wait till I get back for the rest of this meal. They've realized that if they don't have discipline in their prayer life, they won't pray. Are you with me? Hey, along that line, I do it. So you receive it. Others are blessed. Oh, man. Hey, when you start to intercede for them, this is the hardest part of my prayer life because the devil fights it. Asking God to bless people. No, one of the things I'm going to suggest to you, when you pray for people, just don't ask God to bless them. And tell him what, my children never came to me and said, Daddy, bless me. They told me exactly what blessing they wanted, you know. I used to live under the illusion that when your kids left home, they wouldn't need any money. That was an illusion. That was an illusion of the very worst kind along that line. But, I could tell you all kind of stories here my greatest regret is I didn't pray more and teach more about prayer and put a greater emphasis on prayer. I look back across my ministry and stuff like that, and I'll tell you one that comes to mind. I'm praying one morning. My closet, I had a little room down at the church. I live close to the church, so I jog down to the church early in the morning and have my devotion, then jog home and get dressed. I always try to get to work by 8 o'clock. I didn't want the people at the Cape saying to me, you got all day to pray, so we got to work. So I always had my things before. Well, I called the little room down in church, I called it Miami. So when somebody wanted to see the preacher, they could say he's in Miami. That's the most precious place. If you ask me, the one place on earth, that closet I used for over 20 years. Just a little room, 4 feet wide, 12 feet long, something like that. I just got in that room and prayed. And one morning I was in there praying, and God said to me, you don't really believe in prayer. I said, I do. And God said, let me ask you a question. How come around this church you've got a room for everything but prayer? And we do. We have a gym. We had a room we did ceramics in, and of course we had to have a kitchen, and God only knows what next. Well, I didn't have an excuse, because I know that people put their money where their mouth is. Now, I kept, at this time, my prayer notebook was a stenographer's pad, and this was on a December 4th, and I said, okay, do you want a place built for prayer? And I wrote out, I still have that sheet of paper. God said, I want you to build a place for prayer, and as proof I know you don't have a lot of faith, but I'm asking you to do this. Ask me to send somebody by the church with $500, don't know what to do with it. So I wrote down that. On December 5th, I lifted it back up, and God said, ask me to do it before Christmas. So I wrote down, do it before Christmas. Well, you know, prayer is a cooperation with God. You know, you can ask God to do something, but you want to find out whether he wants to use you in it or not. Are you with me? Hey, you know, God bless Mrs. Jones. God might want me to take $20 to Mrs. Jones. Are you with me? And so between December 5th and December 20th, every day I'd ask God if there was anything I could do. He'd say no. On December 20th, I got panicky. I mean, I've never known anybody that came by the church that didn't have money and know what to do with it. Okay? This is 5 days before Christmas, when everybody had spent everything they had and borrowed some more, you know? So I thought to myself, God's in trouble. So I'm going to give him another week. and maybe somebody will get money for Christmas and they'll come by and give me the money. So I said, do it before New Year's. You know what happened that day? Every time I tell this story, and it's a long time ago, I want to cry. That day, a Presbyterian couple I'd never met in my life drove 40 miles to tell me God had sent me over there to give me some money. On December 24th, they gave $500. And after the first day, they gave a lot more. And we have a prayer chapel that stands up there today for that. So, you know, I wish I could tell you more and more and more stories along that line. But I wanted to show you the power of a layman praying. I'm not nearly going to get through it what I hope to tonight. And my wife always says you give too much. I have a prayer plan here that the church has sold 500,000 of them. Last week we sold 70 to the church, to Bellevue Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee, along that line. But when I got out on the road, I realized that this was a little too much for beginners, for somebody who'd never prayed. And so God led me to develop some other things, and I developed a thing called Prayer 101, and I took it down to an alcoholic camp in the summer and taught it. It has a leader's guide and workbooks and everything that go along with it. It's a 13-week course on prayer. Well, you know, nobody seemed interested in it or anything like that, and nobody asked me for any copies of it. And in September, my wife and I went to Wyoming on vacation, and I wasn't well, so we decided to fly back home. And back in those days, you could fly standby without paying all kind of monies, like they've changed the rules on the airline. So we flew from Jackson Hole to Salt Lake City, standby, and when we got to Salt Lake City, there was a plane going to Atlanta and then on home, and there were five guys there, two fathers and three sons, who had been elk hunting in Canada. And they put all seven of us on the plane, and they didn't put me with my wife, they put me with one of these hunters. And after the plane took off, the guy got his Bible out and started to read it. And I introduced myself to him and stuff. Then I went to the bathroom. And when I came back, his nephew was sitting there. His nephew had been down. Now, look, these guys own a bunch of 7-Eleven stores in Georgia. They're still active. They're like 60 or 70 of them. And this guy had been down to the alcoholic camp and picked up my course on prayer. This is Saturday. He was going to start teaching it in the country church on Wednesday that he went to. And he was praying, God, help me. Give me some help with this. And God sits him down beside me for 2 hours. When he writes me on the internet, he said, God runs the airlines. Along that line. To be able to do it. I told Pastor and a couple of them yesterday. That was in 2002. Another thing happened in 2002 that I didn't find out this till 7 years later. I was preaching in Center, Texas at the First Baptist Church there, and I told them, Center, Texas has a graveyard for champion foxhounds. you can't bury your fox on there unless it's a champion. But anyway, on the last, I never do this. This is not me. On the last night, I said, I believe there's somebody here needs to give $1,000 to this church, and they need to buy Jim Cimbala's books. He's pastor of Brooklyn Tabernacle on Fresh Wind, Fresh Fire, and give it out to the congregation. I said, I'm not sure that this is God. I'm very careful about when I say God said something, you know. Well, anyway, after the service, I didn't learn about this for 7 years. After the service, a man came up to the church and gave the pastor $1,000. He hardly ever came to church, and he bought all the books and gave them out in the congregation. One woman took two of them home, and she took one for herself and one for some friends. The man was a tugboat captain and his wife, and he gave it to them. And about that time, they moved to Nacogdoches, Texas, and the wife read it, but she couldn't get the husband to read it. So anyway, one time she put the book in the tugboat, her husband's clothes to go out on the trip, and he read it. When he came back, he was a transformed person. This guy can't even speak good English. I heard his testimony 7 years later on this. And he felt like he ought to start a prayer meeting in this country church, so he went and saw the pastor and said, could I start a prayer meeting on Tuesday night? Because that's when they did it at Brooklyn Tabernacle. He didn't know anymore. And the pastor said, yes, he was happy to do anything going at the church at that time. Do you know in the first year they had 137 people become Christians in that prayer meeting? I'll tell you one other story in 2002. I really hadn't planned to do this tonight, but I will. In 2002, there was a guy in Cocoa, Florida, right below us, made a lot of money off of something. I don't know what it was. But he wanted to give away $200,000. So he asked me for who'd be, he wanted to give it to places that needed help. So I suggested this. I support a drug alcoholic camp that to me is one of the greatest places on earth. I just know the people that have been through there and the guy who runs it ever since he started it. So I said, hey, it'd be a good place. So he gave me a check for $130,000. Boy, I'd never handled that kind of stuff before, you know what I mean? And so I took it down to the alcoholic camp. And when I got down there, the leadership was in prayer meeting. Somebody in South Africa had said, would you come over here and start a program like you've got down here for drugs and alcohol? And they had a couple ready to go, all prepared, but they didn't have any money. Now, they'd been praying for 30 minutes when we got there, and they prayed for 30 minutes more. And I was sitting there thinking, boy, I can't wait till this prayer meeting's over. And, you know, I've got a little mean streak in me, but I had another check for $1,000. So when the prayer meeting was over, I gave them the check for $1,000. Of course, they were grateful for that. Then I handed the check for $130,000. And this guy went over to South Africa and started a program over there. Along those lines. So I'm just telling you all of this to encourage you in this matter of prayer along this line. And I could tell, you know, my wife has a diamond over there I bought for her. When I was in college, I worked for 35 cents an hour. And I bought her this diamond. I met her there and got engaged, and she lost it, and we thought we'd lost it in Texas, and we prayed about it, and God said, it's in that drawer over there. And there it was. I understand somebody found a phone. Who was the lady who gave a testimony?
Crystal.
Eh?
Crystal.
Yeah. Okay, they gave a testimony in here about losing a phone for 2 months and then hearing about prayer like that. And it gets exciting. I mean, what God does. Especially to, you know, like I've been praying for this guy, Keith, and to find out... The guy showed me a picture. He baptized people in the river. And he showed me a picture of baptizing Keith this last Sunday. He showed me Tuesday, this last Tuesday, a picture of him baptizing Keith. And I thought, whoa, I've been praying for this guy. I thought I was going to be the one witness to him, but hey, he got saved. And the guy, the pastor baptized him, said, he's really excited. I want to do things with him. So I could go on and on and on and on. Maybe I'm not really what sure to do what now. I don't want to give you too much tonight, but I'll just tell you how it all goes by telling you about my oldest son. Back when my oldest son was a freshman in college, he got on drugs. I didn't know this at all. This was when drugs first started to come in, and One Saturday morning, the minister of worship at our church came over to our house. I remember all these things like they happened yesterday. And he said, I got bad news for you. Your son's on drugs. So we got him out of bed, and he admitted he was on drugs. And we told him, you got to stop or leave the house. Well, he decided to leave the house. So he left the house, and we started praying, of course, for him. And, oh, God, you know, help Richard. And what we found out of this, one of the best ways to get a parent's attention is through teenagers. And God had to deal with us. I used to say, God, do anything to him or put him in jail. And God said, why don't you want him in jail? I said, that'd get his life in trouble. God said, that's not true. You're proud. And if he gets in jail, they'll write you up in this local paper. They didn't end up writing him up in the local paper. They ended up writing him up in the Orlando Sentinel on the front page. But anyway, when God had got through dealing with me, I told God, I said, okay, put him in jail if that's what it takes to stop him. So one morning we get a call at 5 o'clock in the morning from the desk sergeant in Orlando. He says, your son's over here in drug charges, and, you know. And I told him, I said, if you get in jail, I'm not bailing you out. I'm not bailing you out. And we went over there to see him that morning. I can still see him standing behind. I could paint the picture if I were an artist. He didn't have his shoes on, dirty dungarees or whatever you call them now, and his long, stringy blonde hair, you know, he was after the time. And we left him over there, because I told him I wasn't bailing him out. And so we drove back to Titusville, and God said to me, now, I've never heard God audibly. God said, when those boys get out of jail, because he and the guys he were living with all got put in jail over there on drug charges, invite them over and share the gospel with them. Good. And I was just thinking, Michael over here, his daddy is a lawyer, and he helped Richard get out of jail. So Michael, he did, just indebted to your daddy, legally got him out of jail, and that was another. But anyway, I can remember the day I went over to knock on these apartments. I thought, these guys are going to come over to a Baptist preacher's house for meat. And I was determined not to lie to them. I said, guys, Mrs. Lord will feed you a meal, and I want to share with you about another way of life, because you guys are headed down a bad path. Well, they all came, and they ate the meal, and after the meal, I shared the gospel with them. And after I'd shared the gospel with them, I said, would anybody like to receive Christ? And one guy said, I wouldn't. He held his hand up, and he prayed to receive Christ, and they all left. 3 days later, there was a knock on my front door. The guy that prayed to receive Christ was standing there. He said, Mr. Lord, I can't live the Christian life over there in that life. How can I come live with you? I didn't know that he was my son's best friend. I'd never seen the guy before, except at the luncheon. So I told him, his name was Edward O'Meara. They call him Buzzy for short. I said, sure, come live with us. Well, my son moved back in with him. Now, he didn't have a vaguest idea of what Christianity was about, so we sent him off to a 6-week summer camp to where he could get some of the basics. I don't remember, Campus Crusade or somebody. And we stayed at home. Well, one night we came home from church, and my wife remembers this part of it. I didn't. The Lord led us a step later. My son came in tripping out an LSD. I can still see him standing in the doorway. And he said, don't talk to me tonight. I'll talk to you in the morning. So in the morning, when he got up, I told him, I said, Richard, you can't leave this house for a week. Now, I'm just showing you how God works. I'm trying to show you the secret. And God said to me, invite Louis Hall. Louis Hall was one of Richard's classmates in high school, and he'd been saved out of the drug culture. Invite Louis Hall to come over and spend the week with Richard. I didn't know, but Louis's parents were leaving town, and God had told them to call me and ask me to keep Louis. But anyway, Louis came over. And on Thursday night, he said to me, Mr. Lord, can I take Richard to a Bible study at my house? And I said, okay, that's good. That's not bad. You know, these kids meet all kind of night hours, you know, when us are sleeping. Well, hey, let me tell you what happened at 11 o'clock at night. These guys are meeting around in the room and Bible study. And Richard said, I prayed, God, if there's any hope for me, let the phone ring. And right then the phone rang. And there wasn't anybody on the phone. Well, when Richard came home, he turned around. How do you think I feel every Sunday when I see him preaching in the pulpit, where I preached all these years? How you know, I think of the miracles of God. But what I'm trying to show you is that prayer is a cooperation, are you with me, between us and God and the things that God wants us to be able to do along that line. So, but you got to pray. And let me just see what I've got else. I'm going to stop soon because I've realized, you know, I'm in this business. Hope and faith and love are created in our hearts. And God blesses us as he gives us our needs and even more. You have. I can't tell you. Look, I look back across my life and I say, wow. I couldn't ask for any more than I've got. I've got far more than I ever dreamed of in every area of life. I mean, I've been to 22 mission fields to speak the gospel and things like that. And then you're going to like this last one. If you pray a lot, you're going to get pregnant. And by the way, the one gift I have in this area is I got more children. I found out one time when I prayed for barren women, they had children. I'm not 100%, but man, we get pictures all the time from people across the country we used to when we traveled. Hey, you prayed for, I got off at one church, a Methodist church, and the preacher said, we're going to name a nursery after you. Everybody you prayed for had a baby. But this is not what I'm talking about here, so don't worry about that. The way God works is this. He puts ideas in our minds, and we decide whether we're going to carry them out or not. But often we abort them because it's not convenient, you know. I want you to go see Mrs. Jones. Well, I don't want to get dressed and I don't want to go along that line. So the way God works is he plumps ideas in your mind. And then you either decide to give birth to that idea or you decide to abort it. And that's a decision all of us have. And when you start to carry those things out, that's when you get excited along that line. Okay? Okay. Let me just say one or two more things, and then I think we probably need to stop for tonight. And I should have had a break in here. Now, one more thing. I need to tell you this story, and then I'll tell you what I'm going to do in the morning. I'm going to do it. If God came to you and said, I'll give you anything you want, he gave you a check, and he said, anything you fill out in there, I've signed the check, I'll give it to you. What would you ask him for? Well, I'll just admit a personal story. You know, driving all over Florida, I see these billboards, lottery, $50,000, $40,000, $30,000. So I figured I'd ask God for the numbers. And I said, God, look, if he gave me the numbers, it wouldn't be gambling. Wouldn't it be a sure thing, right? And I said, God, I promise you, I'll give it all to missions. So God has said a lot of things to me in that. One thing he said to me, if I answered your prayers, I'd have to answer everybody else's, and nobody'd get anything because everybody's asking me for the number. But this really got to me. It was on a Christmas day, we were driving to Orlando. Some of our family lived in Titusville and some of them up in North Carolina, and we were flying up midday to spend the last half of Christmas Day with the ones in North Carolina. And on the way to the Orlando airport, the billboard said $60,000. $60 million. I mean, not $60,000. When I got to North Carolina, you see, what I do is, I'm just getting confessed with you. I figured God would give me that stuff. I'd take a notepad and a pencil to bed because he'd probably give it to me while I was dreaming. You know what God said to me? He said, son, this is Christmas Day. If I thought gold would have changed the world, I'd send gold instead of my son. God said to me, the way I'm changing this world is through ordinary people like Mary and Joseph and people like you, if you're willing to be used in it. Well, anyway, what would you ask God for? And this is a Bible story. This is a Bible story. And this would be a good place for me to end tonight because it would do it. Well, there was a guy in the Bible named Solomon, and God came to him and said, I'll give you anything you want. Now, when he asked God for what he wanted, God got excited. God got excited. And God gave it to him. God said, you didn't ask me for long life, you didn't ask me for a lot of money, and you didn't ask me to beat your enemies up. This is what he asked God for. A hearing heart. And we know him as the wisest man that came along. Now tomorrow, we're going to major on hearing God. That's what we... I'd really plan another session tonight, but we've had enough and to do it. And this is what I was... let me see if I can go on. Our goal for these sessions is to get people to pray about committing themselves, not to me, and I'm not even going to ask you to do that, just to commit to God, to give God, starting out 15 minutes a day, 5 days a week for 3 months. And tomorrow morning I'll give you some helps. If you don't know what to do, I'm going to give you some helps to be able to help you what to do. But they say that it takes about a month or two to establish a habit. And you have to push yourself in doing it to be able to do it. So that's what we'll do tomorrow morning, and just talk to you about the basics of hearing God and listening to what God has to say. And you're going to be amazed at how easy it is. Everybody I teach to hear God says this. Number one, I can't believe it's that easy. And the reason that it's easy is that God wants to talk to you. Number two, God wants to talk to you like you want. And the people always say to me, I've been hearing God, but I didn't know it was God. And of course, there's a Bible story along that line. I've got these impressions, but I didn't realize it was God talking to me and plumbing them into my mind. And I promise you this, that your prayer life will change when you begin to listen to God. And you're going to make mistakes. I make mistakes with my wife, and I've been married to her for 61 years. She said, bring home bread, and I bring home milk. Are you and me? but at least I tried. Okay. Any questions, and then we'll go. Anybody got a question? Well, Lord, just show us what you want us to do and lead us from here. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, I want to give you one of those books out there. Just pick up one.